Welcome to the National Federation of the Blind's 2025 Senior Retreat, a time for empowerment, connection and growth. A special thanks to Janie Degenshain, Zoom administrator, and her team for a seamless retreat. Your dedication makes this event possible. Thank you for joining us on this journey.
Thank you all for joining us today, and I know that we're looking forward to new things that we're going to learn about travel. Duncan always does a really good job of getting us information that applies to a wide range of situations. So today, Duncan, tell us what we're going to learn.
Well, today I'm very happy to introduce to you Ernesto Luca. He is a certified orientation and mobility specialist. He is a cane travel instructor at the Colorado Center for the Blind. And I really had wonderful opportunity to work with Ernesto for many years. So welcome, Ernesto.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'm happy to be here and to help you guys understand a little bit more about travel.
Thank you so much. So today, you know, we're going to be talking about indoor travel and storing your cane and a variety of things regarding indoor travel. But before we do, I do want you to know that I did my homework. Ernesto, I had a couple questions yesterday that I could not answer. So I
okay.
And maybe you know about them. So
okay. One
of them was, what is a robo-cane? Have you heard?
I haven't heard about that. I'm curious about that now because I haven't heard of it.
So I did do some research into the robo-cane. It's also called a robotic cane. It actually, I couldn't find any new information about it. The most recent information that I could find on the internet was 2021. So I don't know if the research that they did then went to develop some other kinds of canes, but it was computer enhanced with a wheel that would move a roller tip. It had a 3D camera. The National Institute of Health did, you know, pay for some of this research. But one of the real drawbacks that they even said is that with all of this, with the camera and everything, it made the cane very heavy. So that is generally what I think about all of these newfangled technology-related canes, is that they're going to be heavy. Then I did find out that there is something called a it is like a robot cane. And it is something that like is on wheels and you can lean on it and it follows along beside you. So it is not for people necessarily who have a vision loss. It is for people who have balance problems. And so there was a lot of just weird information that I had about that. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Ernesto, about these?
Well, I have heard about another cane that it, when you were talking about, it reminds
this cane, I think it's called WeWalk.
Yes.
And it,
It is also a game that has some features like, I guess, GPS, and it's supposed to vibrate as you're approaching an obstacle, which I never used that game before, but it will be interesting to try it. I think it will be also a little heavier. But I wonder how it will work in different weather conditions, or if it's gonna, if you fully rely on those features, when the cane doesn't have battery, your skills might, go down a little bit if you don't have previous training, So that's one of the things that I have thought about. I haven't used the cane, but things to consider, of course.
So I did look up the WeWalk. It is about $600.
That is another very good point. Because a lot of these canes are not necessarily affordable. I mean, NFB cane you can buy for $25, and if it breaks, it's $25, but $600, if your cane breaks, it's going to be a different story.
Yes. The other thing I think we want to remember is that a lot of this, these canes that are developed for blind people are developed by sighted people. This is where you're going to learn that I'm very opinionated, that these are sighted people who just can't even imagine how can a blind person successfully travel with just a plain old cane, and a lot of people talking about these special canes on the internet were calling it a stick. It's nothing more than a stick. Well, they didn't know anything about the cane. But just remember that a lot of these things are developed because of pretty negative attitudes about blindness. So the other thing that I was asked to research was called a special tip, the Pathfinder 360 cane tip. It is a rolling tip, so it will roll. It rolls left and right, front to back. It's about $40. I have never seen one or used one, but I don't, I'm sure it cannot be connected to the NFB cane. So again, we're talking about more weight because first of all, you have to connect it to a cane that's going to weigh more than an NFB cane. And then I do not know how heavy the cane tip is itself. Do you know anything about
And
that, Ernesto?
I believe I may have used that before. It was a few years ago, back when I was still in Louisiana. But what I remember about it is that the feedback is not as good as the NFB cane tip. Because it kind of like it rolls, so the different textures is not as easy to identify, or things along those lines. But it is definitely heavier, so you're right on that.
Shelly?
Yeah, Shelly.
Hi. Don't mean to interrupt your
That's okay.
but I did have a thought. As we've talked about the other couple of days, the lighter the cane, the better you're going to get feedback. But also as we age with arthritis and things like that, it's just the long white cane that you get free from the National Center is still the lightest weight. For me, I just prefer that over even the folding canes because there's not a lot of difference in weight, but enough that if you're really struggling with dexterity in your hands or your arthritis or things, it does make that much difference. So I just.
And while we're stopped, there's someone with a hand raised. I think it's Anne Marie Harris, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Anne Marie.
Thank you.
Well, Anne-Marie is, oh, there you go. Oops, now you're muted again. Unmute yourself, Anne-Marie. Okay, well, we are going to go ahead and proceed. And Anne-Marie, I'm going to ask you to hold your question then. So what we are going to be talking about today is indoor travel, how to travel successfully inside, how to find intersecting hallways, shorelining techniques, all of that. So I'm going to let Ernesto talk, since I've been talking a lot so far. Go ahead, Ernesto.
All right. Well, good morning, everybody. As Duncan mentioned, I am a cane travel instructor here at the Colorado Center for the Blind. And I've been working at the center for about almost 7 years. I am a graduate of the Louisiana Center for the Blind, and I also went to Louisiana Tech University to get my graduate certificate in cane travel. So when it comes to indoor travel, there are multiple options that we can use, particularly if you are at a house, particularly like if I like to use pencil grip if it's a house that I am not familiar with. Of course, there might be some things that if you keep your cane on the longer reach might be a little difficult to feel, and you know, definitely. If you're trying to find intersecting hallways, as Duncan mentioned, you know, you can try to shoreline the wall, possibly with pencil grip as well, and or your open palm technique. And then I can also think about instances in which, you know, at the mall, for example, if you're like those big open spaces can be also a little bit more challenging, right? But you know, one thing that I like to do is as soon as I get inside the mall, I like to find out what store is right next to the doors that I came in. So that way when I'm coming out, I can also look for that same store and then find the doors. Listening for different sounds. So like if you're trying to find the food court, you know, listening to where maybe the soda machines are, or of course sounds of tables and maybe sounds of like grills where they cook and stuff, you might hear it. The smell, for example. I know some people like to also use the compass. It could be the compass on the phone, or I don't think they make this anymore, but if you guys have a braille compass, that might be a useful alternative as well. So you have an idea of like, oh, when I came in the mall, for example, I came in through I was facing north as an example, things like that. You know, if you're trying to find chairs indoors, right? So you want to use your cane and pencil grip to feel, once you find the chair, you can put your cane in front of that chair and swipe it and feel if it's empty or not. Or if you find the back of the chair, you can put first the back of your hand, feel for the chair, and then, you know, pull the chair towards you, of course, to feel if it's, you know, if someone is sitting there or not, feel the weight. The different textures, of course, like you might be walking in the tile, and then you might go into carpet, you know, feeling the different textures with your cane for sure is also very important. Asking questions, of course, if you're in a It could be, you know, the example of the mall. You want to go to a particular store, then you can ask people directions about, you know, this the specific place that you want to go to. And I always like to point. If they say to the right, I point to the right because sometimes they might be facing me and their right is my left, right? So it's always important to point. And you know, in stores also, as you walk, you might hear with the echolocation, you might be able to identify once you're approaching a door and things along those lines. The music, you can hear the different music that different stores may have. You know, sometimes if you're walking at the mall, sometimes it might be that the hall, you know, the hall outside the stores may have tile, but the store may have carpet. So you're walking and you all of a sudden feel that you're walking on carpet. That might be that you're walking into a store, possibly. And things like that. The braille is also very important if you're in a mall and you're trying to find a restroom. Locating the braille signs and reading, you know, if it's the men's or women's restroom, things like that is also very important. But yeah, most likely in houses, I think it's also important to, you know, get directions from people, where is the restroom or things along those lines. It can be pretty helpful as well. So those are some of the ideas that I have. I don't know if there are some other things that you might want to add to that, Duncan, or if there are some questions that some of you may have. I'm open
So,
to.
I could you explain shorelining technique and when it would be appropriate to use it?
Okay, so shoreline technique is you can do either with your open palm or pencil grip. If you're looking for a doorway or a little path, I like to use my pencil grip and shoreline the wall. So basically, what shoreline is that you are tapping the wall on your side, or it could be a grass, but since we're talking about indoor in this case, right, the walls. So you tap the wall on your side and then you move your cane. Let's say that the wall is on your right. So you tap the wall on your right and then you move your cane to your left so that you are also trying to keep track of what possible obstacles may be on the other side, right? So you're shorelining the wall, tapping on your right, moving your cane back to your left, and then finding the opening, right? Or listening to the difference in between the wall and the door, right? So you can hear the different sound that the wall makes versus the sound of the door, right? So that is shorelining. You can also use shorelining as you're walking through like a hall with chairs, like if you're at a conference or something like that. You can shoreline to find an empty space, like empty chair as you walk. But mainly I like to use shorelining if I'm looking for something specifically. If I'm not necessarily trying to find a door or opening, then I try to walk in the middle, but that depends on the situation. But I prefer to walk more in the middle of the hall and then use shoreline primarily to find openings or doors.
So I think the main thing I always try to tell my students is only use shorelining if you are looking for something.
Correct.
The beginning traveler, once they, we don't usually teach shorelining like the first day because they will want to use it all the time because it gives, I think it gives people sometimes some security that they're right next to the wall. So you don't really want to do that. You want to use it only when you're looking for something. You can shoreline on the right. You're looking for an opening or a door or something on the right side, or you can shoreline on the left. It may mean that you need to increase your arc a little bit and you want to make sure you still have, like if you're shorelining on the right, you want to still have your cane coming over to the left a little wider than your shoulders so that you would find any obstacle there. The secret to shorelining is to be consistent. I worked with many people where they'll shoreline for a couple steps and then they stop and then they shoreline a little bit. And, so then they're going past what they're looking for. So you want to be consistent to locate something.
And along those same lines, if you know that the one the one thing that you want to be aware as you shoreline, because you know if you're not looking for something specific and you're all of a sudden shoreline, the walls might turn and you might be veering without wanting to turn, right? You might be turning. Let's say the shoreline is on your right, you turn to the right because the wall is turning. So that's not necessarily what you want to do. So that is one of the things that you want to keep in mind, right? So it's, as Duncan said, if you're not looking for something specifically, you don't have to shoreline necessarily.
Right. And this also makes me think of I know we have students from time to time who want to put their hand on the wall inside to trail. We call it like trailing the wall with your hand, even though you've got a cane. We really, really discourage that. I usually would have my students. I would give them something to hold on to or put their hand in their pocket because if you trail, there's a number of reasons why you wouldn't want to trail a wall. Somebody could be standing there, and then all of a sudden you have your hand on them in maybe an awkward place, or it could be the, and also when you do that, you don't get as much confidence in what information your cane can give you. So,
Yes,
this
your
is Liz.
focus.
So sorry. Could I share just a really quick story related to what you're talking about with having your hand on the wall?
Yeah, but let me have Ernesto make his comment and then we'll come back to you. Thank you.
Yes, as Duncan was saying, because your focus is now on your hand that is on the wall and not on your cane, right? So your feedback that you're getting is you're paying attention more to what you're feeling with your hand versus what you're feeling with your cane. So it's very important that your focus is always on what you're feeling with your cane
Right.
instead of what you're feeling with your hand on the wall. So that definitely, I also encourage you guys not to use the hand on the wall.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, who made the comment? Go ahead.
Oh, that was Liz.
Liz, go ahead, Liz.
Oh, sure. So I was just going to share a really quick thing. I knew better, but it still happened. I was in the bus station and I was at like kind of a glass wall and I was looking for the door and I had my hand on it, which I really shouldn't have. I should have used my cane to find the handle. And some well-meaning sighted person ran up and started opening the door and it caught my finger in the door jamb because I had my hand up on the wall instead of my cane. And thankfully, I was able to pull it out real quickly. But just an example as why you don't want to use your hands on walls or when you're looking for the doorknobs.
So
Well,
good
thank you
morning.
for sharing that. That's important.
Good morning. This is Winford.
Hi, Winford.
Hi, I made
Welcome.
it
I'm
in.
glad you're with us. And
Yes.
for those of you, I think most of you met Winford on Monday, but he teaches cane travel in Texas.
Yeah, I'm working at the Chris Cole Rehab Center for the Blind and been here for going on 25 years. one of the things I wanted to add with the shorelining is like when you're doing that shorelining, you want to make sure that, again, if it hasn't already been said, but you want to make sure that the cane tip is really low because as you're following the shoreline, maybe on the outside of a building that has or inside that has the glass on it. Well, the glass is sitting in a metal frame, and it sounds more solid when you're hitting it than when you hit the glass. And then as you're walking along and you hit the metal door, that sound of the metal has a different sound to it. It's usually going to be a little bit more high pitched when you hit the door versus the bottom of the wall because it's solid. So that's
okay.
Another thing to look for.
Yeah, that's a good tip. So somebody else have a question? Judith, do you have a question? No. Okay, so we want
to I did want to ask one thing.
Okay.
Why would you go to a mall if you can't see to shop to buy anything?
Oh, my goodness. I love shopping, girlfriend. Blind people shop all the time. So get that out of your mind.
How do you buy your clothing if you can't see it?
I use a shopping assistant, or sometimes I'll go with a friend or family, and I ask very specific questions, and I touch the clothes and look at them and, you know, see what's in style on the mannequins. I mean, there might be a session about that later on in this program, but I'm not sure.
And also, I mean, of course, like the clothing is important, but there might be things at the mall that you might not necessarily need, you know, to close, right? It could be technology, right? You might need a new phone. You might go there. You might need to go, and there might be a restaurant at the mall that you like. So you go into the mall, buy food at the restaurant, find the food court. It could be running some errands. I mean, there are so many things at the mall that, you know, it's not just clothes, but of course, clothes is important. But as the last person was saying, you can get a shopper's assistance.
What is a shopper's assistant?
Excuse me, guys. Let's stick with travel, and we'll talk about this on Friday at the 1 o'clock hour.
Okay. All right. Good.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome.
Okay. So I did want to talk about, Ernesto, could you talk a little bit about what to do with your cane inside? Like you're at a restaurant, or you're in a meeting at a table, or even in you're sitting in a row of chairs with people around you. What do you recommend you do with a cane?
Well, so if you are at a restaurant, as an example, one thing that you can do with your cane is to place it on the floor. Sometimes, depending on how the table is placed. So if the table is going long ways in front of you, I like to place my cane going parallel with that table. So that way it's not on the way of other people. Or sometimes it could be that I put the cane under my chair going across the table and under the next chair, right? Same thing, it's not on the way. If I'm standing by, if I'm sitting and next to a wall, like I can just place it in the corner next, like in between the wall right there. You know, if you're in a meeting, same thing. You can place your cane under the, let's say that like in a conference, for example, as some of you might be at the NFV convention. So the chairs are all in different rows, right? So you can place your cane in front of you, you know, as you're sitting with, you know, the cane in front of you long ways along the row. So that is another way to place it. And that is some things to consider. I know that, you know, some waitress or waiters, they might, you know, say, oh, I can grab your cane, or you always want to be in charge of your cane, right? You always want to have it in case you need it for whatever reason it might be. You always want to keep your cane with you. So, you know, it's always good to have it. You know, I know this is kind of like along the same lines, but I was just thinking as I was talking with the airports, right? So in the airports, I always like to keep my cane with me at all times, but I like to also bring a folding cane. I bring my straight cane And I like to bring a folding cane because sometimes if you're sitting in the airplane, you might place your cane in between the window seat and you know the in between the window and the chair. But if you're sitting in the aisle, right, you have your folding cane, so you don't have to talk to the person that is sitting on the aisle or sitting by the window anytime you need to stand up. So you have your folding cane, and then you can, you know, use it if you're need if you need to use the restroom or things like that. And also, it's a good to have it just in case your straight cane happens to break whenever wherever you travel, that like you have a spare cane with you, right? But those are some of the options that I can think of for how to store your cane in those type of situations.
Can I add to that?
Sure.
Okay. again, like storing my cane on the plane. One of the things that I do, because the with the tips that we use on the straight canes, the NFB style canes, the tips are fairly easy to take off. I'll usually take my tip off when I store it between the wall and the seat, because sometimes when you're trying to get off the plane or whatever, it may get caught and it'll pull off, and you may not know that you've lost your tip until after you've gotten off the plane. Another way that I have been storing my cane, like let's say I'm in the in our auditorium here, when we're having our meetings, I will, if I'm on the end seat and all the chairs are off to my left, or even if I'm in the middle, what I'll do is I'll stand my cane up between my feet, and if I'm gonna, I'll tell the people to my left that I'm gonna slide my cane behind your feet. And usually they'll, be okay with that. So I slide it between, so it's between my knees basically. And it's, so when I put it all the way through to the seat to my left, my handle is resting on my right thigh, and the cane itself is under my left leg. And because it's up against the chair, of the legs of the chair, it typically doesn't disturb anybody's while they're sitting there. So I'll just store it like that. Sometimes when you get in,
Oh, go ahead.
And when you get into like a booth at the, like one of the restaurants, and you're the booth, the two seats are straight across from each other. When I slide in, what I may do is when I sit down, I'll put the tip diagonally across from me, and our canes flex a little bit. And as I'm sliding it, I'll let it flex a little bit and slide it over towards the wall. And now I can have it next to me by the wall. So that's another way I store it.
Okay, and one thing I was going to add to what Ernesto said about putting the cane on the floor. If you do put your cane on the floor, you're in a meeting, and like he said, parallel. I always like to put it parallel to a long table as well. I like to put my foot on my cane because your cane can move around. It can roll a bit. You just want to make sure you know exactly where it is. So that was something that I
Definitely.
did. Yeah.
That's one of is a good point.
the things I tell our students in our cafeteria when they are sitting across from each other, and I'll tell them, when you do store your cane across from you, okay, that's a really good point. It's like put your foot on your cane, because I tell them if they can't pick you up, then they can't pick up your cane. Because I've seen many times in our cafeterias, we've got a 6'2" guy that has a really long cane, and a 5-foot person that has a short cane. And the short person will pick up that long cane, they'll take off, and they may not, it's very weird, but sometimes they don't know that they have the wrong cane for at least an hour, and you're going, and finally they go, wait a minute, this cane is really tall, or it's very weird. But yes.
So yeah, I think these are all good things. I'm thinking that we might have a little time, since we're talking about using the cane, to talk about how to have a long straight cane, put it in a car with you. And so if you want to do that, Ernesto, or I can.
Yeah, we were just doing that the other day, actually on Monday. We were having the students practice on how to store your cane on the car. So particularly, you know, a lot of the students, they said that they like to take their folding canes in those situations. But, you know, the straight cane, I will say, is your, you know, is your primary tool, right? Is the folding cane I like to use as a spare cane, right? But the straight cane is the one that I'm carrying whenever I'm going, to every place I go, that's the one I take. So if you're getting on a car and you're sitting on the back seat, let's say you take an Uber or something, you put your cane in between the passenger seat and the door, right? So I like to store it, that the correct way to store it is in between the passenger seat or in between the passenger seat and the door, right? So if you're in a group, a lot of the times, what we were discussing with the students is that, you know, everybody hands the cane to one person who's getting on the car last, and they get on the car, and then the person store their cane, all the canes in between the chair and the doors, right? Mm-hmm. If you're sitting in the front seat, it goes the same way. So you always get on first, mm-hmm. and then you place your cane in between the chair and the door, because you don't want to put your cane first, so you don't have to jump over it, right? So you get on first, and then you place your cane in between the chair and the door, basically.
Right. So, you know, if you are a passenger in the front seat, and a lot of you are going to be when you ride with somebody, just like Ernesto says, get in first. So you're still holding on to your cane, but your cane is outside the car. Go ahead and get in, and then take the handle of your cane and put it back toward the back seat, in between the seat and the window, and put it back until the tip, comes close enough that you can bring the tip into the car. Does that make sense? You guys might want to practice this. But I always found that to be easiest. Yeah.
It's a good practice for sure, because, you know, of course, you want to make sure that, as Duncan said, that, you know, the tip is all the way to the end, like it reaches that. Because if you're closing the door, like, you don't want to break your cane. Like, if you're not sure, like, make sure that your cane is inside, that is all the way out of the way of the door, so that you close the door, you're not breaking it neither. So that's a very important thing to consider.
The other thing that I explained to our students when you are getting in, particularly like Lyft or Uber or something like that, when you get in, as you're starting to store your cane, at first keep your foot outside the door, just for that time that you get your cane inside the car before you actually lay it down next to you, because many times the Uber drivers or whatever, they may want to close the door for you, and if your foot's already in and they close it, snap, there goes your cane. So if they see your foot outside the door, then they know not to close it until the cane's actually inside, and then you can lay it down.
Yeah, usually the canes don't survive being shut in a car door or run over, for that matter.
So,
let's open it up for questions. Does anybody have questions?
Musi has her hand raised.
Musi, go ahead, Musi, if you can unmute yourself. There
Okay.
you go.
I want to know the etiquette of when you have a folding cane, like in a restaurant. You never put it on the table. It always has to stay in your lap or at your back. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, if you think about putting your cane on the table, so picture
Right.
that you're walking with the cane and that, it cuts whatever like dirty things might be on the street or sidewalk. So you
Right.
don't want to necessarily keep it on the table. That is a good point.
Thank you. Yeah, because
And
that is kind of
right. And also the shouldn't the folding cane always, when it's being stored, have the little catch on it so it doesn't pop open? You know what I mean?
That would be good, yes, just to keep it with the little
The
tied it.
cord. There's a
Yes, the
cord.
cord.
Yeah.
Correct, correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. Other questions or comments?
This is Judith. I thought I raised my hand, but I guess it didn't come up. What is the thing with the tip? The tip comes on and off and you have to replace it. And what if you lose it and it comes off? Does the cane no longer work or what?
Well, the cane, it works. Now, my advice is for you to always keep a spare cane tip on your pocket because you never know when your cane tip will, break or if it just falls off for whatever reason it might be. It's always good to have a spare cane tip on your pocket so that way you can replace it and then you can continue using your cane.
Does the cane not work without a tip? Is
Yeah,
that
it'll still work without a tip. It's because what the cane tips, they fit over, it kind of depends on the cane, but the straight canes style that we use, it fits over like a rivet or a screw. So it fits over that. If you do lose your tip, I mean, you'll still get some sound from that rivet. But or screw, but what will happen is the longer you use it without a tip on it, it will wear that rivet down and make it harder to replace the tip on the word will actually stay on there.
And
So
it's
the
not,
key, the
yeah, it's not going to give you the same information. The metal tip gives you a lot of auditory information as well as tactile information that you won't be getting. So if somebody does lose a tip and they have to walk a little bit without a cane tip, I think most people who are experienced travelers, feel that they're at a disadvantage tra walking around without a cane tip. And hopefully they'll do as Ernesto recommended by having a spare cane tip.
So are they
And on the
pretty easy to get on and off
they
the thing?
are yes it is pretty easy. You had to just put as the our colleague was saying, if you put the cane tip has a little hole that you place over the screw on your cane tip on the end of the cane and you put it vertically. And then you push your cane tip against that screw until it comes all the way in. So it's pretty easy to put and to take it off and to put it back in. It's pretty easy to do that.
I had a second question. I don't eat out very often, but if you're in a round table in a restaurant, where do you store your cane?
Well, in that case, if your chair is one of those that is open on the bottom, so I like to put my cane under my chair, across the table, and across under the other chair. But if that is not the case, let's say that you're in a booth, then you can, as our colleague was saying earlier, you can just place it at the end of the booth against the wall. You can just put it right there,
Yeah, I'm
or
talking about a round table in the middle of the room. versus both. Yeah.
Or you can just sometimes, like, I like to put it, like, just keep it against my resting on my shoulder. That's another thing that you can do, but
okay.
But you can still, you can do that. You can, yeah, and you can still run it across the table underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what Ernesto said.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We have three raised hands.
Oh, it's, okay.
Jennifer. We have four. Jennifer, then William, then Anne-Marie. So, Jennifer?
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Sorry, I hit the wrong button. With airplane travel, do you suggest a folding cane or a long cane?
Well, with airplane, I recommend to take a straight cane and a folding cane as your spare cane, because, you know, if you're sitting at the aisle seat and you're storing your cane in the window seat, then you have your folding cane that you can use whenever you need it. Instead of, you know, letting the other person know that you need your cane, you just have it. But also, it's good to have a spare cane, you know, just in case your straight cane breaks while you're traveling. Like, it's always good to have your folding cane. But yes, I always bring both.
So okay, hang on a second. I think a piece that of information that we're not sharing with you that we forgot about is that if you are sitting either in the middle seat or in the aisle seat and you have your long white cane, you would ask the person who's sitting near the window, could you please put my cane over there, my long white cane? Then you would have your folding cane with you if you need to get up and use the restroom.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think bringing both on board is a very good idea. The reason I brought this up is I'm sure everyone heard of the Toronto plane crash where the passengers were upside down in their seatbelts. And that's what I would worry about. If your cane is not with you and you have to evacuate, then what? So I think that's a good idea to have the folding cane with you. And hopefully there was no one that needed one on that plane. But you can't say never because clearly this happened.
Correct.
William, your hand is raised.
Hi.
Hi, William. Go ahead.
So I've taken up wrestling in these later years when using a cane, with getting in a car and trying to deal with the seatbelt and putting the cane in. Is there a certain order or pattern that you use so that you're not grappling with the seatbelt and the cane at the same time? Just because I don't have quite the flexibility that I used to have. And so oftentimes they get a little bit entangled.
So I like to get in the car first. And then I like to put the cane in between the door and the chair. And once the cane is in between the door and the chair, that's when I get my seatbelt on, basically.
Hopefully that's
kind of, I guess, what I do as well for the most part. But I still lose the battle sometimes. Sometimes the seatbelt wins.
Yeah, just make sure that your cane is not, you know, in a way, and on the seatbelt way, right? So try to put it, you know, right in between the chair and the door, and then make feel the seatbelt where it's at. And then after you place your cane in there, then you should be okay putting your seatbelt on.
Yeah, the cane is going to be very close to the floor of the car,
correct?
But in between the seat and the window area. So hopefully it wouldn't even get in the way of the seatbelt.
And the other question I have, I think, is probably for another day. It's for things above waist level, because your white cane really doesn't give you information in that regards. Are you dealing with that on another day?
Well, we probably could talk about that tomorrow. We're going to be talking about outdoor travel, and I think that's where do experience it more. But yeah, if we have we have time today, we could come back to that.
There's another hand raised.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Vincent.
Vincent, up.
Vincent, go ahead. You can unmute.
Yes, what I was going to say about always having a spare cane with you. I usually travel with a straight cane and a folding cane. And the reason is that one time I was going to the airport, and as I was walking through, my cane got broken, like almost split in half or three quarters or something like that. And I didn't have a cane. So what I did was I went to a store, and I purchased an umbrella, and the umbrella became my cane for the remainder of the trip. After that, I always carried a spare cane.
Definitely.
That was a tough lesson to learn.
Right.
Well, okay, yeah. Did you have a question? I saw your hand had been raised and then lowered.
Okay, can I just...
I did.
Can I just...
Go ahead, Vincent.
Okay.
Certainly, excuse me.
The other one is that it's better to use a slightly longer cane. And usually when I walk around, especially in airports or any terminals, in any place where there are a lot of people, I like to make wider circles, like almost like 9 to 3. And mainly because many people sometimes are walking around without looking. They may be looking at their phones, or they may be busy talking or whatever. So by doing the wider circles, I can actually, my cane will touch them, will hit them, and they will be aware of where I am, and they will not either trip over my cane or break it. So that's another thing that I do. I make my presence known to anybody that is close to me. That's all. Thanks.
Well, but in that same instance, if you're walking in a crowded area, remember that you're using the pencil grip, because that way it's easier for you to navigate and for others not to trip over your cane, for sure.
Or to step on it and break it.
Right.
Correct.
Right. Okay. We have another question, I think.
I think Anne Marie was next, and then we had a phone number with a raised hand.
Okay, Anne Marie.
Hey, everybody. Vincent, I'm sorry I interrupted. I was just trying to answer. I finally got unmuted. I was the one that asked about the Pathfinder 360, and that was addressed. I more was curious if those of you teaching mobility had people using it. I did purchase it. I find it very helpful in the grass, in an area with dirt, but I find it, like Ernesto said, that it doesn't give enough cues that I feel comfortable using it on a daily walk. And Duncan mentioned the WeWalk. Did you by chance look at the app? Because someone from my local chapter had a friend who was involved in its design, and he told me that the app can be used without the cane, and I didn't know if that was so.
Well, I don't use that cane tip with my students, because the cane that we use here at the Colorado Center for the Blind is the NFB straight cane, and I don't think that cane tip will fit in with this type of canes. But
okay,
the app, the WeWalk app, I haven't used neither. It will be something to consider now that you mentioned that. I can look it up and download it and see how it works, but I haven't tried it yet.
Well, thank you. And also, for those of us who use, like for me, I use an Amputec cane, and my cane actually is hook style, so to change the tip is a little different. If someone is using a different cane other than the NFB cane, will there be directions with it? For me, my mobility instructor taught me how to change my tip.
I haven't used, unfortunately, the Ambutech canes enough to answer that question, Duncan. I don't know if you have any input on that.
I haven't either. Are you asking if NFB gives directions on how to change a cane tip?
No. I'm asking if someone should purchase a cane like I have, where it's hook style, either marshmallow tip or ball tip, that you can interchange. My mobility instructor came to the house and she taught me how to make the change. Would there be directions with it so someone who might purchase one for the first time would know how to do it?
Google it.
I don't know.
Thank you, Janie.
Google it.
You know, it would be a question for Ambutech. We do not use Ambutech canes at the center except for support canes. We do use the Ambutech support cane, but we prefer the NFB long cane because we feel it does give the best information.
And I would also say that I would actually say that Ambutech or any other place that you buy your cane from will not give you instructions on changing the cane tip. That would be something that your instructor would have to show you.
Okay.
Well, thank you, guys.
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
we have time for another question.
There's an 832 phone number with their hand raised.
If your phone number ends in 0779, go ahead and ask your question.
Tell us your name, please.
Sure. Hello. This is Gloria Henry.
Very good.
Hi, Gloria.
Yes. Hi. And this might be a silly question, but when you're on the plane with the long cane, and you said you store it on the side by the window, right?
Correct.
Does the cane ever slide away from you? How do you get it to stay there?
I haven't had that issue particularly. It usually stays there. Like if you put it against the what do you call it? Where you put your hand, like the hand to rest your hand.
The armrest.
Correct. Sorry. If you put your cane in between the armrest and the window, you shouldn't have any issues with that. I haven't had any issues with it particularly.
Okay. It's a pretty tight fit, I think.
Yes.
You're not going to be moving around.
Yes.
Okay. I've never done it, so I was just curious as
definitely.
To, you know, if it would move. Okay.
Yeah. That's not a silly question. That's a good question because earlier we were talking about how you want to have your cane right there with you. This is one instance where you don't have it right on your person.
Never mind.
Let's see. We're almost done. I will tell you that tomorrow Winford will be doing a presentation on outdoor travel. And I just really want to thank Ernesto for coming and working with us on all of these issues. Thank you so much, Ernesto.
For sure. I'm happy to help with as much as I can. So you guys, thank you for letting me participate, Duncan.
Yeah, well, thank you for volunteering your time. And it was really good. I think we had a lot of interest and a lot of good questions. And
for sure.
Tomorrow, if you think of other questions regarding what we talked about today or yesterday or Monday, try to keep those in mind, and we'll take questions again tomorrow.
And thank you, Duncan, and your team. We appreciate all that you do and all that you share. So this is okay.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thank you for spending your time with us today. We appreciate your participation. For more information,
contact President Glenn Crosby at nfbseniors@gmail.com or call 443-681-9345. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.